Also, herzlich willkommen hier am Tag 3 der 21. Gulasch-Programmiernacht hier im Medientheater. Wir haben heute wieder einen sehr interessanten Vortrag, bei dem es um Observability geht, und zwar mit dem LGTM-Stack. Ich möchte immer sagen LGBT-Stack, und das wäre dann wahrscheinlich wieder was mit Rust und Blauhain oder so. Aber wir werden heute über den LGTM-Stack sprechen, und zwar haben wir dafür heute für euch Cedi. Einen großen Applaus bitte.
Hi again. It's my first talk, so I'm sorry for the guys and girls that watched all three of them. I hope the third one is as entertaining as the first two. This slide, everyone's seen them probably once or twice already this weekend. I'm Cedi, I'm an SRE. I work with big and large systems, do resiliency engineering, but I got life outside of just my computer. So I enjoy some spare time doing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and yeah. So I prepared this entire talk, and then afterwards I noticed, well, I'm talking about a lot of products from Grafana Labs, which is like a for-profit company, and I realized maybe people interpret this as a sales talk. It's not. I don't work for them. This talk is not sponsored by them. But if someone from Grafana is watching, send some swag. So before we get started on observability itself, I want to clarify some things, because we're going to talk about them in this talk a lot. So there is a differentiation between observability, monitoring, and telemetry. Telemetry means the way how we get our monitoring data from the server to our monitoring system. The monitoring system is monitoring is the continuous observation of our health signals. This can be anything from metrics to logs to events to traces, literally everything. And observability is what we make out of metrics and monitoring. It's the looking into the data, understanding what the system is doing, understanding system behavior by looking at monitoring. When we talk about observability, you often hear the three pillars of observability. It's logs, metrics, and traces, and we're going to talk through every single one of them. And neatly enough, Grafana Labs has a product placed in every category of this. For the observability front end, probably everyone already uses Grafana dashboards, right? You probably have heard of them. They're pretty nice. For logs, we're going to look into Grafana Loki. For metrics and long-term metric storage, we're going to look into Mimir. And for traces, we're going to look into Tempo. And that's why it's called the LGTM stack for Loki, Grafana, Mimir, and Tempo. We do need all three of those pillars, because every single pillar answers a slightly different question that we might have. When we look at our observability platform, we want to get some answers. And metrics are really, really good for answering the question, do we have a problem? Is there something that's going on in our system? Logs, on the other hand, are really good at telling us what is the actual problem. And connecting the two sometimes is really, really hard. So we need traces to bridge the two of them, because traces tell us where is the problem, or where might the problem be. Before we go through the more interesting stuff like Mimir and traces, we're going to start at logs, because they're pretty easy to explain. I think everyone's seen logs. They look something like this. They're usually large text files. Sometimes they're easier to read, sometimes they're harder to read, but there are some very bad examples, like multi-line logs. Great for looking at, great for humans to understand, but we usually don't want to look at them ourselves. We want to have log aggregation systems looking at our logs. We want to have automatic analysis of our logs. And if your log is multi-line, you can't really do that, because it's really hard to parse. So we don't do that. We try to have logs in a single line. Every line represents one entry. Much easier to parse by a machine. Another dark pattern is not using context. Just put something out like error. Yeah, nice. I know it's an error, otherwise it wouldn't have logged anything, right? So what we should do, and what probably everyone already knows, is structured logging. Here's an example of a structured logging log message. And it's structured because we have individual fields in our log line, and every field annotates some context. It's still easy to read by humans because you see the log format. It's just a single line. You can jump over the uninteresting labels and just read the last part, the error open some file. Still easy to read, but now you can parse it automatically by your log aggregation system. And if you use structured logging, you should stick to one of those log formats. I know it's easy. You can invent them yourself. You can just print key value pairs in your printf statements. Don't, just use some standard. But what is log aggregation and why do we need it? You can log into your server and just grep or tail and grep something. That works great. It doesn't work so great if you have 500,000 servers. You can't log into every single server and try to figure what's going on. You need like one central place where you can go and tail your logs from there. Also, in the type of work environment that I'm in, I can't log into every server. I don't have permissions to go to those servers. So I have to get permissions to go to the log aggregation system, and now I'm able to view the logs because now my access is very granular just for reading the logs. Also, if you have log files that are like tens or hundreds of gigabytes long, good luck with grep. It's not the slowest tool in the world, but it takes some time and you probably don't want to do it. So Grafana came up with this amazing tool called Loki, and it had some minor hiccups in Loki V1, but now that we have Loki V2, it's actually really, really good. And if you are somewhat familiar with Matrix and Prometheus, it kind of sounds similar. Instead of having an exporter that exports your Matrix to Prometheus, you have Promtail. And Promtail collects all your log files. It automatically detects all your log files on the system. It monitors syslogd and everything. Promtail takes those logs and sends them to Loki. So Promtail acts as the sender. Promtail is going to be installed on every server that we run. And Loki is the central place where we go to. And of course, we access Loki through Grafana. And this is roughly how it looks. I prepared a small screenshot here. You can see here on the top, we have our LogQL query. That's the query language used by Loki. It is very similar to what we are already used to with PromQL for metric querying. And it's really powerful, too. You can run log queries that return you log entries, like just as we've seen here. We have some log messages below. But you can also do metric queries. You can use LogQL to create a query that queries your log files but returns metrics. So that's also super useful. For example, if you want to do graphs like the one that I show here, because now you see the log volume, and you can create dashboards that show you the log volume for error logs in your microservice. So that's really good. I already spoke about it a little bit, why we need Grafana or why we need log aggregation, so I don't talk about this for a second time. But there are other tools out there like Elasticsearch with the Kibana front end. But Loki is amazingly easy to use. I've tried Elasticsearch clusters in the past. But nothing was as easy as Loki, to be honest. I know Heiko uses Splunk for it. It's kind of enterprisey, kind of expensive if you want to do it in your company, but Loki is open source. It's free. There is enterprise support that you can buy, but it's free. It's open source. And it scales very well. And that's going to be a major theme across all tools. They scale very, very well. To the other pillar of our observability stack, the metrics. Do we have a problem? And I think everyone should already notice metrics are really good to identify if we have a problem. Metrics are usually emitted as time series, or you have like some sort of a time series name and a value, and you record it in a time series database, so you can plot them just like on the screenshot here. And probably the most commonly known tool for doing this is something like Prometheus. Prometheus came as one of the earliest Cloud Native Computing Foundation members. It was initially developed as sort of an outside of Google development of something that Google had internally. It became the de facto standard for all metrics or time series data. When we talk about metrics, there are like usually two different approaches to it, like the push and the pull approach. The other big contender for first place in who's the greatest metric tool is something like InfluxDB, and I actually know a lot of people using Influx instead of Prometheus, but it comes down to how your system behaves. Influx itself is passive, it's just there, it's a service that's there, and you need an active component, just like Loki for logs, you need an active component for the metrics, most of the time Telegraph, that runs on your server and then sends the data back to Telegraph to Influx. That's why we call Influx a passive system. And Prometheus is, on the other side, more active. Prometheus is pulling the data from our targets, and I think I visualize this quite nicely here. And pull is most of the time a little bit better than push. I personally prefer it. It's way less overhead in your application. I don't have to worry about sending my telemetry data from my application. All I have to do is expose a metrics endpoint and I'm done. Prometheus also gives us the central config location. While in Telegraph, we have Telegraph configured on every server, and when we want to make a change there, we have to change a bunch of servers at the same time, which is sometimes hard to facilitate. Also in Prometheus metrics, same as in logs, we tend to add labels to it so we can carry context, like from which server does this metric originate, like the host name in this example. Or also, for an hypothetical example of a DNS server, we can just have one time series, that's the DNS query type, and then have both the host name and the type of query as labels. Saves us some active time series, because the more active time series, the more cardinality, the harder it gets. I can't do Prometheus justice here. I only have an hour, and I could probably talk an hour just about Prometheus. So go and watch those other amazing talks. Prometheus itself is great. I love it. I use it on a daily basis, but it also got some problems. Prometheus isn't really a long-term solution. The default retention time that is configured in Prometheus is 15 days, and maybe it's just me, but I think a lot of people are like me in this regards. I want to know, how did my system behave last year? How did it behave last year at the same time? So I can make accurate predictions about how it might look next year. So I can do capacity planning and network traffic forecasting and those things. And Prometheus isn't really good for that, to be honest. There is the option of federating your Prometheus clusters and only federate like aggregated data, but it's really, really hard, and I wouldn't recommend it. So the solution is Mimir. Mimir kind of adds to Prometheus. It's not a one-to-one replacement for Prometheus. It is a long-term storage solution and a multi-tenant solution for Prometheus as an extension. So Mimir in itself is 100% compatible to Prometheus. All your Prometheus queries are still working. You don't have to worry about that. The architecture behind Mimir is slightly different, and we will go into that in a little while. But for now, I just want to mention it's insanely scalable. So let's say we do have a bunch of Prometheus servers and we want to add Mimir to it. So Mimir is just this big box, I know, but I want to show you why it is so scalable. Because from Prometheus, we send all of our metrics to the distributor of our Mimir cluster. And we do this using the Prometheus remote write function, which is completely built in Prometheus. The distributor then sends the data to the ingester, and the ingester stores the data in an S3 bucket. So it's good to have like S3 storage, like in most cases nowadays. The nice part is both the distributor and the ingester can be horizontally scaled. You can have as many of those components as you want. If your workload increases, just deploy 10 million distributors, whatever. If you want to query the data, it's a little bit more complex. You're going to write your query in Grafana. Query is sent to the query frontend. From the query frontend, it's assigned to like a worker queue, which is called a query scheduler and a queryer, while the queryer being the active worker. And from there, it both queries the ingester if there are any time series that haven't been written to the S3 storage yet. And it also queries the S3 buckets directly. And in each step there, we have a cache. So this improves scalability a lot. And if you run the same query twice, three times, 10 times, and you have a whole engineering team working an incident and everyone hitting refresh with the same query, the query result will be in the cache, so it's blazing fast. And last but not least, we have a compactor, which is a separate microservice that you can enable. So you're not piling up hundreds and hundreds of gigabytes of metrics, but it occasionally compacts the data and removes unnecessary labels. And as you can tell, this slide took a very long time to build. So advantages of Mimir, it's massively scalable. It is very cheap in terms of storage if you compare it to Prometheus. Prometheus storage usually depends on how big of a disk you can put in your server. And if you have your Prometheus on a Hetzner Cloud VM, you have to provision an even bigger server or attach additional drives to it, and that gets expensive quite fast. So using S3 buckets is pretty cheap. Another advantage is you can have a single alert manager sending alerts for all of your tenants. And the last part, the last pillar that I want to talk about is traces. And a trace, by definition, is the recording of all paths taken from the beginning to the end of the microservice architecture. So if we look at this example here on the left, we see that our request hits on the edge service A, and then we branch into four different microservices to fulfill this request. When doing tracing, we pass along a context between every microservice. So we have this context object passed along every time. And we can nicely visualize this in the waterfall diagram on the left. You see the time, how the time goes, and then each block is called a span. And the span is the representation of a work unit. So using this diagram, we can see that probably sub-process E or microservice E takes the longest, or is the part that takes the longest in our request. The nice thing about spans is that, as I said, they represent an entire unit of work. And we can attach attributes, just like in metrics and logs, to those spans. And also, we can attach events to them. And you will see this later in my short demo. And this really helps us figuring out where the problem is, because if there is an error somewhere along the request flow, we would see it annotated in our span that this span is the one that actually failed. But when we talk about tracing, it's hard to talk about it without talking about OpenTelemetry and Jaeger. I don't want to go into the details of Jaeger because it's like its entire ecosystem with its entire observability backend. So what I want to focus on is OpenTelemetry, which has been born as the child of OpenTracing and OpenCensus, and is maintained by the Cloud Native Computing Foundation, like a lot of projects nowadays. And one of the key things that I really like about the OpenTelemetry framework is the collector binary. It kind of works like a gateway. You can push some data and you can push like Jaeger traces into it. You can push OpenTelemetry traces. You can also push Prometheus metrics. And then you can use the collector as sort of a gateway or a transformer and send them to somewhere else. For example, you could send Jaeger into the collector and export it as OpenTelemetry, which is kind of nice. And this works seamlessly with Grafana Tempo. And the most common use case, or the way I use it in my scenarios, is I take my Prometheus metrics and my OpenTelemetry data, pipe them into the collector, and from there I split the requests, so the logs go to Loki, the traces go to Tempo, and the metrics go to Mimia, which is kind of nice. And I would recommend using Tempo instead of Jaeger because it is very, very well integrated with the Grafana ecosystem. And it's easy to jump from your metrics to your traces because you can actually generate metrics from traces. Like every trace, as we've seen before, has like a duration. So we can extract this duration and save it as a time series metric. Same goes for logs. You can jump from your traces to the logs to figure out what went wrong. One final piece of the puzzle here is Grafana exemplars. It's part of the Open Metrics spec, so I pulled this example screenshot from the Open Metrics spec. So you basically annotate your time series data with an example trace. You can see the foo bucket here. There are some requests that fall into this bucket, and one example would be trace KO something something. And you can just add this at the end of your time series. Quite easy to do. I was able to integrate it into all of my services with relative ease. So if we look at how it looks combined, I prepared like a short video for it. I'm not doing a live demo, that always fails. So you have to watch the video with me. It's no sound, so I will talk you through. I think everyone saw Grafana dashboards at this point. It's pretty common, pretty straightforward. I want to highlight the latency and the dashboard latency here on the slides. Because those two graphs are actually generated by Grafana exemplars. And let's look into it. We can jump from our Grafana dashboards into the traces really easy. And now I just select one of the traces and see the waterfall diagram here on the right. I see that there is an error, and I can watch all the error messages from there. Or I click the logs for the span button, and now I am in my logs. And you see the logql query on top here. I add the JSON parser for it, so I can actually parse the JSON log message. And just clicking on the log message expands it and displays all the fields just like I want them to. The other example that I want to make is for the dashboard latency. In this example application, I have a dashboard querying an API. And if I look at the trace here, I see the traces are in two different colors. That actually means that there are two different microservices involved. And I can even jump to the dependency graph here and see which microservice called which other microservice and see all the spans in this sort of node graph. Now, I was talking about everything of this being open source, and Sure, you can use it open source. You can run it on your own infrastructure, but it comes with some disadvantages. And it's not me trying to sell you Grafana Labs products, but there are some costs involved in running your own infrastructure. I mean, it's nice on the pro side. You can control your data. Your data is not leaving your premises. And sometimes that's exactly what you want. But it's also kind of expensive because you quickly need an entire observability team. Sure, I can run it for myself, by myself, and even host some other stuff on it, but it gets messy quite fast. If I want to performance optimize my LGTM deployment, I'm struggling. Also, if you run your own monitoring, you always risk of losing your monitoring system. Like, if you have a data center outage, you also lose your monitoring infrastructure because it's in the same data center. And if that happens, you're essentially blind, and your feature engineering teams, they try to debug the problem, but they can't because they can't reach your observability stack anymore because it's down with the rest of the infrastructure, which is shit. So you need additional monitoring, you need outside monitoring, you need even more monitoring. So you go into a spiral of death really fast. There is some advantage of buying like commercial products. I don't want to sound like the guy who says come into the WhatsApp group or something, but you might consider if you run it at home, yeah, run it yourself, sure. If you run it for your business, maybe consider buying it from Grafana Labs directly and let them host it on their cloud. Yes, it's kind of expensive, but at the same time, you're funding open source development. You make life easier for people who cannot afford buying Grafana Labs. So it's like, try to figure out what you can afford, and can you afford the observability team, or can you afford putting it into the cloud and don't worry about it? So because I only had so much time and I just couldn't include everything that I wanted to talk about, I recommend you watching some other talks and white papers and research it for yourself. And that's about it. I was a lot faster than I anticipated, but that leaves more time for Q&A.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, great. So, do we have any questions? Oh, come on. Okay, one in the front. Fantastic. So I don't have to walk too far. Okay.
Do you have any experience migrating from an existing logging system like Kibana to Grafana?
Somewhat, yes. I made the migration from Loki V1 to Elasticsearch back to Loki V2. And the best way to describe it, set a cutoff date, let's say the 15th of next month, and then you ingest all your data from that date going forward only in the new logging system, and keep the old data around, and if someone needs to look into historical logs, then send them to the old system, and after like a year or two or whatever your retention period is, turn the old service off. It is super painful migrating logs to another log aggregation system.
Okay, more questions? I don't know. So, and it really does scale, right? I mean,
yeah,
I once like had the crazy problem that I had kind of like World of Warcraft logs in Prometheus, and at one point during a 40 people raid, the server just did not collect metrics anymore. It was...
Yeah, so the entire Grafana stack, I showed you the architecture in more detail about how Mimio works. It works quite similar for all of the three microservices. So Loki works very similar, and Tempo also works very similar to that. They all store the data in S3 buckets, and they kind of have the same architecture with the distributors, the ingesters, and then the query front ends, and everything tying together nicely.
Yeah, looks good to me. Okay.
Nice. You can always reach out on my socials. I put them here on the slide as well. Feel free. Don't use Twitter. Text me on Mastodon.